Tonight, Dynamite reached 300 episodes. This was a landmark episode for Tony Khan. And it was not the go-home show. But if it was, it actually would have been a great final sell for that pay-per-view tonight. We had a very good episode of Dynamite tonight, an episode I enjoyed very much. And we had a return to form of Kota Ibushi in the main event tonight. First time in many years, one-on-one against Kazuchika Okada. And indeed, we had the return of Ibushi's very good friend, his friend till the end, Kenny Omega, re-emerging after the violent assault by Okada several weeks ago that resulted in gobs of blood being spilled on TV. He came out to make the save for his old buddy at the end of the show tonight. So, of course, we had a Golden Lovers reunion here at the end of Dynamite. We also had Mercedes Moné defending the TBS Championship against Mina Shirakawa. And look, maybe it's just me trying to be the optimistic one here. I legitimately thought there was a better than decent shot that we might get a title change tonight, and Toni Storm would have something to do with it. And in fact, Toni Storm was at ringside for that title match tonight. In fact, there was no title change, and we are in fact getting champion against champion strictly for the AEW Women's World title in Texas in less than 2 weeks. Mercedes is walking in as the champion. And maybe I was the only person in the world who thought there was a chance of that tonight, and I feel like a fool now. But they had a really good match, though. They did have a very good match. Swerve and Ospreay, they are going to be paired up in Texas to take on the Young Bucks, or at least that was the challenge that they issued last week. We never actually got an acceptance of that challenge from the Young Bucks. We did tonight, but only after Swerve and Ospreay put something else on the line, which I was very happy to see because I called that out last week. I said, there's no way that this could end like this because it would be foolish for the Young Bucks to agree to the stipulation that Ospreay and Swerve asked for without getting something in return. And so tonight we found out what that's going to be. The stakes have been upped in the match between those two teams. And MJF on this show tonight trying to qualify for the number two spot in the men's casino gauntlet match coming up at All In. The winner, of course, will get a guaranteed future world championship match. Mark Briscoe qualified last week to enter a number one. You want to enter early. It's not like the Royal Rumble. It's the exact opposite, in fact, because the gauntlet could end at any moment. It could literally end in the first 5 minutes of the match. So you want to get in as early as you can. That's the advantage that Mark Briscoe has. MJF was trying to be number two tonight. Everything on this show all fed into, and that's not even everything, but everything on this show fed into the All-In card, which is rapidly approaching. I don't know what the last count was as far as the attendance. It's right around 20,000 in that range. I'm sure they'll be above that by showtime, maybe closer to 25. But this is not only their big show of the summer, this is their biggest show of the year. Of the year. The only reason they didn't go back to Wembley Stadium this year, according to Tony Khan, is because Coldplay had a concert and they weren't able to run Wembley this year. So they decided to have their first All In on U.S. soil. But they're going back to Wembley next year. This is their big annual show. Everything is building to this show. And the other thing as well, the most important thing I didn't mention, is the fact that we have a main event of Jon Moxley defending the AEW world title against Hangman Adam Page. And on this show, we had a stipulation. So that main event now will not just be a traditional one-on-one match. It will be a Texas death match. And they will be in Texas. We've had Texas death matches that are not in Texas, and that never really made too much sense to me. It's like having a New York City street fight in California. That would be pretty dumb. But we're going to get a Texas death match in Texas, and the world title will be on the line. So on the whole, I had fun with this show. I thought this was a very good episode of Dynamite, the best that I've seen out of them in quite some time. This is your Dynamite 300 review for July 2nd, 2025. I am the Solemn Monster, and look, I would be remiss if I did not mention the other significant aspect of today. It's not just Wednesday. It's not just Dynamite 300. Maybe you could tell from the shirt that I'm wearing where I'm going with this. Today is also the 68th birthday of the best there is, the best there was, and the best that there ever will be. Yes, indeed, the one and only. And I have him here with me tonight, ladies and gentlemen. You're getting him as an exclusive here on the Sound Off. Brett the Hitman Hart. Here he is in all of his wonderful 8-bit sprite glory. You know, he wasn't in WrestleFest when WrestleFest came out all those years ago, but he should have been. And if he had been, this is what he would look like here. This was a gift I got a few years ago from one of my listeners. Shout out to Andrew, wherever he may be. But the Hitman, I figured, you know, on his birthday, he would make a cameo appearance here on the stream. And so here he is. He's actually quite tall. This thing actually is quite tall. But no, one of the cooler gifts that I have gotten, I believe they call these perler beads, I think is what they're called. It's actually pretty amazing how these are made. I certainly don't have the talent to do something like this. But anyway, shout out to Andrew again. But yes, happy birthday to Bret Hart. Did you know? I didn't know this until a few years ago. How I didn't know this until like 3 or 4 years ago, I'll never know. But did you know that Bret Hart's middle name is Sergeant? I mean, he calls himself Hitman, but his middle name is Sergeant, which is a much cooler middle name than I have or anybody I know. So I was blown away when I first found out about that. But if you don't know the story, it makes it even better. Many years ago, Brett was on social media, but he was on Facebook. And then he finally joined Twitter. I would imagine his kids probably got him to join Twitter. And this was around 2011. Right now, his handle on Twitter is at Bret Hart, which makes sense, right? That's the best handle for him. But that was not his original handle on Twitter. His original handle on Twitter was Hitman Bret S. Hart. S, of course, being for his middle name. Unfortunately, and what they did not realize at the time is that when you read it, it read as Hitman Bret Shart. So obviously, Bret, I'm sure, was not aware of this. And Bret Hart had a handle on Twitter that said Bret Shart. And thankfully, that did not last very long. That was quickly corrected. And we ended up with at Bret Hart. But yes, for a brief period of time, we had Bret Shart, at Hitman Bret Shart on Twitter. And if you didn't know, now you know. But anyway, happy birthday to the Hitman. Yeah, Sergeant Hart. There it is, Sergeant Hart. You know, I almost had the chance to host a Bret Hart Q&A at one of these Comic-Con type events. This was months ago, and it was going to be taking place this summer. I was very excited for it, and unfortunately, it fell through, so you know, it ended up not happening, and I was very upset about it, but that would have been a very cool thing. You know, to be able to sit down with Brett and ask him a bunch of questions and maybe field questions from other people, that would have been a cool experience. And that would have taken place later on in the summer. It's not going to happen. But again, today is Brett's 68th birthday. I just wanted to take a moment here to acknowledge this. Should be a national holiday. And wish Brett not only a great 68th birthday, but I think we would all agree, here's to many more birthdays to come. Hopefully. He's been through a lot. He's lost a lot of friends. He's lost a lot of contemporaries. And hopefully he will enjoy many more birthdays to come. I also have to give a shout out to somebody else who I believe is with us here in the chat tonight. Shout out to our friend Steve Mello for his assistance with that wonderful thumbnail for tonight's stream. I love it. It's one of my all-time favorites. Let's just give Steve a good sound-off salute. I woke up this morning. I don't know what made me think of it. But I said, okay, we got Dynamite 300 tonight. And I just instantly thought of the movie, even though it's 20 years old almost. And I thought of the movie and I said, you know, I have an idea for what I want. I know a guy. Let me go to the guy. And I went to him and this is what he came up with. And so it turned out great. So, Steve, thank you. Tony Khan as King Leonidas. There you go. You see him in the corner there. Look at him. He's never looked tougher than he does there in that image. King Khan. Think about King Kong. We have King Khan in the corner. like and subscribe. Super chats are open. We had a couple of bombs dropped on us here before I even went live tonight, so I want to give an early shout out here to Avili and Fire Panda. I appreciate your support very much. Also wanted to, I should mention this. It's pinned in the live chat. There are two new super chats. And again, you can find all the special amounts down below. There was a new $40 one. That is now the new $35 one. And I have replaced it with a brand new $40 one. And this one is for the sickos. So anyway, there's a couple of new ones there for you to play around with if you so choose. I also wanted to make mention of this because we made the announcement earlier this evening. He was not on the show tonight. He was not on Dynamite 300. But Ricochet is going to be making his return to House of Glory, the first ever House of Glory World Heavyweight Champion from many, many years ago, is returning to HOG for the first time in 8 years. It is High Intensity, our biggest show of the year, that is coming up the night before SummerSlam, Friday night, August 1st. Tickets are on sale right now at HOGWrestling.net. So how about that? Ricochet. Maybe he'll do that funny noise when he comes. We'll see. Never know. Never know who he may be facing. But let's talk about this Dynamite show tonight, because there was a lot, again, that had to do with pushing the key matches at All In, which is exactly what it should have been. And that's what we had up and down the card tonight. But it started with the number one contender for the AEW World Heavyweight Championship, a very angry, a very pissed off Hangman Adam Page, stormed down to the ring in a very bad mood after the way that Dynamite ended last week. He said he'd told us already how much this means to him. He's already told us, you know, how he would ride through death for this. He said that he would free the AEW World title from that briefcase at All In, and that is a vow that he intends to keep with his life, he says. Bro, it's not that serious. It's really not. But he takes this very seriously. So Moxley can tie him up and bloody him, but it will not be enough. They can wrap a chain around his neck and hang him from the sky, but they would have to kill him before he lets this chance pass him by. And if they think that he is going to let the Elite or the Death Riders' involvement cost him this thing, you're a dumbass, he says. Because at All In, like all of Jon Moxley's matches, he knows they are coming, so he will welcome them. He says, give me the Elite, give me all of the Death Riders. Jon Moxley, you give me everything or you give me death. And you make this a Texas death match. So that brought out Jon Moxley and Marina Shafir through the crowd. Moxley got into the ring by himself. He rejected Hangman's proposal for a Texas death match. Says, you don't want that, he said. You don't want that. You think that you do, but you don't. Hangman doesn't want to wake up on Sunday morning with the title and all that comes with it. Moxley says he lives in pressure. And as he's talking, we got, you know, chance of shut the fuck up from the crowd and me. People call themselves the best wrestler in the world. That's basic bitch shit. Ooh. That'll get some people talking. He's much more than that, though. And he will show the entire world on July 12th at All In exactly who he is and what a world champion looks like. Hangman doesn't have... He doesn't have it inside of him, what it takes to beat him for the title or what it takes for a Texas death match with him. It's not something that he would survive or walk away from. So Hangman smacked him. And Moxley came back with the double leg, took him down, but Hangman mounted him. And then he pulled a fork out of his jacket pocket and he started to threaten him with it. And he started yelling at Moxley to give him what he wants. Like he was Dave Bautista out here. Wheeler Yuta showed up and Hangman knocked him down. Then Marina Shafir got in the ring and she slapped Hangman across the face. And then she slapped him again and then multiple times. And he stood there and he was just staring at her until Yuta, I think he did an ankle pick or he was holding on to the ankle. Claudio Castagnoli hits the ring and he attacks from behind. So they put the boots to Hangman. Then he laid out Hangman with a neutralizer and he left the ring with Yuta. Hangman crawled to the mic, and he got back to his feet, and he asked, is that all you got? because he's still standing, bitch. And a pissed off Claudio goes to walk back because Claudio's already in the crowd. Now he's like, oh, fuck this guy. He goes to walk back to the ring. But Samoa Joe is now standing ringside. Powerhouse Hobbs, Katsuyori Shibata enter from the crowd. So now Claudio and Yuta, they back off. Marina Shafir appears behind Hangman as she tries to blast him with the briefcase, but he blocks it and he gets the case away from her. He wrestles it away from her. And Paige screams that I've got something you want, Moxley. And he demands Texas Death. He's screaming, give me Texas Death. Moxley in the crowd, he turns back to go grab the microphone and he says, you want it? You got it. Texas Death. And then later on, we found out that Tony Khan made it official, as he usually does, immediately after these segments. Hangman tosses the briefcase back to Shafir, that he goes to leave, and he makes it as far as the apron, but then he stops, and he said, if Moxley needs a reminder that he's willing to do whatever it takes, and then he springboarded into the ring, and he lays out Marina Shafir with a buckshot lariat, and these people, they were in Ontario, California tonight, these people went crazy for that buckshot spot. And the Death Riders all had these shocked looks and expressions on their faces as they played Hangman's music, and the segment drew to a close. This was a great segment. Moxley, I do have to say, you know, Moxley saying that Hangman doesn't want him in a Texas Death match because it's something he wouldn't survive. You know, I raised my eyebrows as I was listening to this. Not only has Hangman been in multiple Texas Death matches before, but you may not have noticed that 4 days ago, literally 4 days ago, AEW posted the full Texas Death match from Revolution 2 years ago between Hangman Page and Jon Moxley, which is a match that Hangman won, by the way. So not only has Hangman had Texas Death matches before, he's had one against Jon Moxley. And he's beaten him. And I don't know if that should scare me or not, the fact that he's already beaten him in a Texas Death match. If I don't know if that bodes well for his chances of doing it again. But it was kind of silly for Moxley to say that. And even Hangman pointed out on the microphone. He goes, you know, you're just a liar. Although he didn't mention that the two of them had had one of these before. But I like the addition of Texas Death. It's basically their bloodline rules. What they're doing is they're telling you in advance, look, you guys already know that the Death Riders are going to get involved, and the Elite's going to get involved. Everybody is going to get involved. Darby Allin's probably going to show up and get involved. Swerve and Ospreay might get involved. The Ops will probably show up. You know, it's going to be their WrestleMania 40. And so instead of pretending like that's not going to happen here, they're coming right out and saying, look, we already know that this shit's going down, so let's just make it Texas Death. Basically, no holds barred. Anything goes. Bring everybody you got. I'll take them all on. It'll be Hangman against the world. And obviously, Hangman has some friends, you know, who are going to watch his back. So I like that they just came right out and said, look, let's just make it Texas Death. And it's just going to be crazy and overbooked. And hopefully it'll end up being a lot of fun like WrestleMania was last year. Not this year. But I like that. I like the addition of that stipulation. The buckshot to Marina Shafir, it popped the crowd huge. You know, after all the times that she's gotten involved and she's attacked people, and she was involved in Anarchy in the Arena. So, I mean, she was mixed up in there, her and Willow, with the guys. So it's not as if she hasn't gotten in there before and taken bumps, you know, with some of these people. But just seeing her get that buckshot, I'm a little surprised maybe they didn't save it for the pay-per-view, but they knew what they were doing when they used it on the show tonight because it got a huge reaction. So this is a great segment. We had Mercedes Moné against Mina Shirakawa. This was for the AEW TBS Championship. Timeless Toni Storm came out to the ring with Luther, not to do commentary, which is too bad because she's usually very entertaining at it. But she came down to the ring to sit ringside and observe and watch the match. And in front of her, she actually had a table like Mercedes did many weeks ago. She had a steak dinner. There was a cake sitting on the table as well. But she just sat there. She was catatonic, basically, for the entire match. She wasn't I mean, expressive in any way. She wasn't talking to anybody. It didn't even look like she was really paying attention to the match. She had this look on her face like she was concerned, but basically in like a trance, and she just sat there the entire time. Mercedes had photos of Toni Storm taped to the bottom of each of her boots, and she was kicking away at Mina before she ripped the photos off. She peeled them off. Monet sent Mina to the floor, and then she started writhing around on the mat. She was mocking Toni Storm, who's done that before. And again, she was still sitting motionless at ringside. During the commercial, Mina trapped Mercedes in a figure four around the ring post. You know who would be proud of that? This guy right here. First guy I ever saw do that spot. This guy right here, he likes that figure four around the post spot. Don't you? Yeah, you do. We'll bring him back for the super chats later. Mercedes battled back and applied the statement maker, but she wasn't able to hold on for very long. Mina got her trapped in the figure four again. So Mina managed a spinning head scissors off the apron and a tornado DDT off the steps. Mercedes, though, returned the favor with a spin kick and a meteora off the apron. Back inside, we got a forearm battle until Mercedes tried a sunset flip and she rolled through into another meteora, her favorite move. There was a clunky sunset bomb spot into the corner, followed by another meteora for a near fall. There was a fifth meteora. Yes, I was keeping track of this. There was a fifth meteora that appeared to connect, but Mina rolled through and slammed Mercedes' injured leg down with a dragon screw before going back to the figure four. Mercedes managed a rope break, got one finger on the rope. That's all it takes. Mina called for the glamorous driver, but Monet rolled through, tried a Monet maker. Mina, though, countered into some rolling elbows and a buzzsaw kick that caught Mercedes flush on the side of the head. Spinning back fist connects, and Mina followed that with a glamorous driver, but Monet barely got the shoulder up. So Mina went for it again, but Monet hit a backstabber. Mina no-sold it and hit a sliding kick, but Monet kicked out at one. Mercedes connected on a tombstone lung blower. Mina, though, kicked out. So they traded finisher attempts. Mina again tried for the figure four, only this time Mercedes rolled her up with a cradle for the flash pin. This was a very good match with a very abrupt finish that felt like it came out of nowhere. A slightly disappointing one because I thought Mina had a real chance to win the title here. Not clean, not in the slightest that I think she was going to beat her clean. But especially when they showed Toni Storm sitting at ringside and she was catatonic and she wasn't moving, I said, I wonder if this is just her putting on a show here. And as we get closer to the end of the match, or if there's a referee bump and Mercedes tries to leave or tries to cheat and use the belt, all of a sudden she won't be catatonic anymore and she'll get involved. And that will lead to a shock win for Mina here on this big 300th episode where you figure they might want to do something memorable. And it feeds into their match at the pay-per-view. Mercedes would lose her first match here, which would shock a lot of people if that would have happened. But what it would have done is it would have gotten the TBS championship off of her. If the idea is that Mercedes goes to Texas and wins the world title, keeping the TBS title on her is a terrible idea. If the idea is that she goes and she loses to Toni Storm, which I actually am more hopeful about now, given everything that's happened so far and the build-up to this match, then that's fine. But what I don't want to see, because I don't see what it really accomplishes, certainly nothing good, is if you keep the TBS title on her and she collects another belt in Texas, and now she has both women's championships, then what? The only place for her to go at that point is down and to start losing. I think we all know that. But I just don't see what that accomplishes. At least if she would have dropped the TBS title now, it puts even more heat on their match. Toni gets revenge for what Mercedes did to her last week. And you eliminate that problem. Does it make the outcome a little more predictable? Are people going to look at that and go, oh, well, she's certainly going to win now. Yeah, but you know what? People are talking about how predictable it is already. They've already, you know, looked at this match and said, ah, she's going to win. Mercedes is going to win. So those same people who would say, well, that would make it too predictable. If you were to ask them now, they would tell you the outcome of the match is going to be very predictable. So what difference does it make? So that was the thing that disappointed me about this. Am I shocked that Mercedes won? No, I feel like I was a man all on an island unto myself when I even gave her a shot at losing here, but she won again. After the match, Mercedes took a cheap shot at Mina, and finally, Toni Storm woke up from her hypnosis and she hit the ring. Mercedes bailed, or so she thought, but Toni had her back turned, and she got blasted by Mercedes, who came back in with a shot with the TBS title. Mercedes went outside to the cake that was sitting on the table. She picked it up. She licked the frosting off the cake. Then she took a sip of Tony's champagne, and then she splashed the rest of it in Luther's face, and she laughed, and she left. All I'll say is this. Despite everything I've talked about, you know, the TBS title, and, you know, is it a mistake to continue to keep it on her? I have no doubt that these two women are going to go out there in Arlington, and they're going to tear it up. You know, Mercedes clocked in another very good match tonight against Mina. So that should not be lost on anyone. This is a woman who hits far more than she misses with her matches. Whatever you want to say about her booking, or, you know, if you're unhappy with it and the belt collector stuff and all that, she goes out there and she has very good matches with pretty much everyone she steps into the ring with. There's no reason to think that All In is going to be any different. You know, so when you look at that card and you say, what's the main event, right? You have three matches that conceivably could close the show. And I will say this, if Hangman is not going to win the world championship, then I think Mercedes and Toni is absolutely on the table as potentially the main event of the show. But if Hangman's going to win, if they're going to take the title away from Jon Moxley, absolutely nothing else should close the show except for that match. You know, unless he's going to lose and they have some big twist or big angle plan, that's a different story. But it's a big enough match here where you could at least consider it. I'm looking forward to the match. I'm just uncertain about coming out of the match, what the whole situation is going to look like with this division. If this woman ends up claiming both belts, it just feels to me now, and I wouldn't have said this 2 weeks ago, but it feels to me now like we're probably looking at a Toni Storm win. Because otherwise, I just don't understand it. If it goes the other way, doesn't make any sense to me. Feels like Toni has to win this match. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Even as it's become more accepted to talk about seeking help when you have a problem, and seeking out therapy is one of the ways to address those problems, there's still a stigma attached to it. And there shouldn't be, but there is, especially for men. Men today face a lot of pressure to perform, pressure to provide, pressure to keep it all together. It's no wonder that 6 million men in the U.S. suffer from depression every year, and it often goes undiagnosed. The struggle is real, and real strength comes from recognizing that you have a problem and doing something about it, not only for yourself, but for everyone else in your life, especially those that depend on you. If you're a man and you're feeling the weight of the world on your shoulders, talk to someone, anyone, a friend, a loved one, or a therapist. Therapy offers many benefits for your mental health, from coping skills to stress management, teaching you the skills to strengthen your relationships and remove barriers to forming new ones. It can also help you cope with and overcome issues stemming from past traumas in your life, no matter how big or small. Some that you may not even realize are still impacting your everyday life. With over 35,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 5 million people across the globe. And many of those people can attest to how much it's worked for them, which is why BetterHelp has an App Store rating of 4.9 out of 5, based on over 1.7 million client reviews. It's also fully online, making it convenient enough to fit into your busy schedule. And you also don't have to feel committed to one therapist if you want to change to a new one. BetterHelp lets you switch at any time. As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a diverse variety of expertise. Talk it out with BetterHelp. Sound Off listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/Solomonster. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. Now, earlier today, Matt Jackson surprised his brother by buying a limousine. Not on their own dime, but he said on Tony Khan's dime. And he was showing that there were boxes of new sneakers in the limo that they had gone around shopping and buying. Again, all on Tony Khan's dime. They rode the streets of California. They stopped outside their old elementary school before heading to the next stop. There was a second segment where they were going to their childhood home after stopping at In-N-Out Burger. They were disappointed that their house seemed bigger when they were growing up, but they quickly opted to head back to their limo. I didn't give a shit about any of this, but they were in California. Obviously, they're from Rancho Cucamonga, so basically this was like a homecoming for them, so that's why we had these segments with them visiting their old stomping grounds. Nothing more, nothing less. We had a four-way with MJF, Brody King, Anthony Bowens, and AR Fox to determine who enters number two in the men's casino gauntlet match at All In. We already know that Mark Briscoe is entering at number one, so number two is basically the same thing. It's like number one and two in the Royal Rumble, so number two is also pretty important. MJF bailed to the floor at the very beginning as Brody mauled Fox and Bowens. He splashed AR Fox and Bowens up against the barricades, and then he, they turned to MJF on commentary. They showed he was sitting in for a little bit doing some commentary as all of this was going on. He said he was going to let them kill each other and then pick up the scraps. So Fox got hung up on a move. I don't know what he was going for. Some kind of move where he was going to do a little flip over the top rope and I think do a double stomp on the apron, but he got hung up in the ropes. But he quickly recovered. He delivered a senton to King on the floor. King got back into things and dove out on Fox and Bowens with a suicide dive. MJF appeared from out of frame and he hit King in the back with a chair, and then he tossed Bowens and Fox into the ring to try to pin them, and that didn't really work out too well for him, and that took us into a commercial. So MJF, he was gloating to the camera, and then he turned around into a big chop from Brody. AR Fox delivered a twisting brainbuster on MJF for a near fall. So MJF left the ring. He went to ringside to go grab a chair. King punched the chair into MJF's face and then delivered a cannonball to all three opponents in the corner. Everybody traded cutters for some reason, and King covered Fox at the end of all this for a near fall. Fox recovered, pulled off a 450 splash on Brody, and covered for a close near fall. MJF hit a hammerlock DDT on Bowens and then attempted a heat seeker on King, but he got backdropped to the apron and King grabbed him in a choke. We've seen him do this to Darby before, where he's choking him and he's hanging him over the edge of the ring, and Darby goes limp and he lets him go. It's basically what he did here with MJF. So inside, King pulled off, I wrote here, deadly gonzo bomb is what I wrote. This was a deadly looking gonzo bomb. Wow. It looked, from the angle they shot it at, it looked more devastating, I'm sure, than it actually was, but I certainly wouldn't want to be on the receiving end of that. That was to Anthony Bowens. Fox was almost late in breaking up the pin attempt. He dove off the top rope to break things up. MJF rushed in to apply the salt of the earth armbar and got the tap out win on AR Fox. And I mean, once they announced this match last week and you saw who the participants were, you knew exactly why AR Fox was in this match. He was in this match to take the losing fall. Should have been pretty obvious when this was announced. And MJF winning was the predictable outcome here, because last week he was in a war of words with the man who already qualified in the number one spot. So who else could be number two if not MJF? And there was a report as well this week that MJF has been lobbying for a program, or at least to work in some way with Mark Briscoe, that he's really wanted to work with him, and it's something that was very important to him. And so he's going to get that chance at All In. And really, I would imagine that Mark Briscoe is someone who almost everybody on the roster would probably want to work with, whether it's on the same side or against him. I would imagine that MJF is probably far from the only one who feels that way. Briscoe actually made his way out after this. He was wearing a shirt that said MJF has a tiny kosher pickle. Briscoe said MJF qualified for number two in the gauntlet, but that only guaranteed him an uninterrupted ass-whooping for a few minutes. Briscoe made it clear that he wasn't addressing anybody but MJF, and he said that his beatdown is coming courtesy of calling him a bitch last week. He challenged MJF to a talk next week if he has a set of balls next to his tiny kosher pickle. So then Jet Speed came out. This is where things took a nosedive here. This was the one thing on the show that I really looked at and I was like, you know what? This just, I could see what's going on here, but this didn't really work for me. So Speedball Mike Bailey, Kevin Knight, they come out. They attack Lashley and Benjamin. So these guys have been trying to prove that they are worthy of getting a shot at the tag team titles. And they keep getting their asses kicked by the Hurt Syndicate. This was no different. They came out here, Lashley, Benjamin, very quickly overwhelm them and get the best of them. MJF and MVP are sitting in chairs at ringside. They're just kicking back and observing and enjoying all the carnage. Hurt Syndicate went to go leave. Knight and Bailey, they got back to their feet and they said, hey, we're still standing. So MVP sent Lashley and Benjamin back to the ring to deliver power bombs to both men. And MJF is yelling at these guys to stay down, but they didn't. So Lashley and Benjamin, they kicked their asses again. Knight and Bailey, they struggled to their knees and they said they might know how to hurt people, but they'd have to kill them if they want to keep their titles. Oh, that can be arranged. So Knight said that Benjamin's mama taught him how to hit like a bitch, and then he challenged him to a singles match on Collision, which is being taped, I believe, as I speak. That is episode 100 of Collision. There was some good action here. I am sure all the others in this match, especially Brody King, will find their way into that gauntlet. They won't be number two, but they'll find their way into the gauntlet on the card. The gauntlet is going to be the way for Tony Khan to get a lot of people on this show who would not otherwise be on this show. And there may be a couple of surprises in there as well. I don't know if we might see someone. I'm trying to think, like, from the last crop of WWE releases, other than Braun Strowman, who I don't think is coming in, who was released? I mean, I guess Carlito was, but like, who was released that could potentially show up in this battle royal? Well, it's not a battle royal, it's a gauntlet match, but you know, we saw Ricochet debut, right, last year in the gauntlet. Is there anybody like that this time that we've even heard about potentially interest in from AEW that could potentially debut in this match? I can't think of anybody. I don't know. I haven't heard any names mentioned of anybody that there's interest in bringing in, but they do try to have some surprises in these matches, so I would expect there to be one at least. But MJF has to be the favorite. I don't know who else is in this gauntlet other than those two guys. Clearly MJF is the favorite at this point going into All In. Now I wanted to just mention real quick here, there was a great angle at the MLW show last week. MJF showed up in disguise as a surprise to attack Mystico. And he let Mystico know that this issue with the two of us is not over yet. Like, we're not done here. I'm going to embarrass you. I'm going to embarrass your countrymen. I'm going to embarrass CMLL. So we're going to get another match between MJF and Mystico. Mystico could be in this gauntlet match. He's actually going to be on Collision this weekend. He could actually be in the gauntlet. There could be some interaction between them. Obviously, this match, though, is not happening in Texas. Now we know that. It has felt to me like either Forbidden Door, they could do the match there, or CMLL has an anniversary show at Arena Mexico coming up in September. I could see them wanting the second match because AEW got the first match, even though it was at Arena Mexico. I could see that match happening on September 19th. But the two of them, they will have a rematch, just a matter of where and when. I think that probably will be the where and when. But another beatdown here from Jet Speed, who I see what they're trying to do. They're trying to show that these two guys are resilient. They can take a beating and they can come back and you can't keep these guys down. They're like some scrappy baby faces. Nothing they have done, though, has got me excited to see this match at the pay-per-view. Once the bell rings and they have their match, I'm sure it'll be a very good match. The talent is there. They have done nothing to make me go, hey, I'm super excited to see this match at All In. Or, hey, you know what? These guys, they really do have a shot at beating Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin. Every time they come out, they get their asses kicked. Every single time they get laid out like a couple of geeks. So the buildup to this has been very weird. Even though I could see what they're trying to do, it's not working. They branded this next match Heroes versus Villains because they were tying it into the Superman movie, which is dropping not this Friday, but next Friday. So AEW was more than happy to oblige and provide whatever it was that Warner Brothers Discovery wanted to promote this new movie. So this match was Heroes versus Villains, the Young Bucks, and Konosuke Takeshita against Bandido, Roderick Strong, and Kyle O'Reilly. Takeshita is challenging Bandido next Friday, night before All In, for the Ring of Honor World Championship, which is why these two guys were both involved here in this match. Kyle O'Reilly applied a front guillotine. Matt Jackson escaped. He delivered a Northern Lights suplex. Bandido then delivered a press slam to Matt and battled back and forth with Takeshita until Takeshita delivered a Blue Thunder Bomb. Takeshita delivered a huge Liger Bomb to Bandido moment later after this and got a close near fall out of it. The Bucks and Takeshita, they delivered some triple team offense to Bandido. First, it was a vaulted spike pile driver, and then a double super kick into a back suplex. O'Reilly applied a guillotine to Takeshita, but he powered out of it. And the Bucks and Takeshita delivered a series of super kicks and elbows to O'Reilly. They followed with a three-man version of the BTE trigger and then a raging fire from Takeshita to win the match for the heels. Hot match this was. Crowd was super into it. Bandido is awesome. Takeshita is awesome. Bandido against Takeshita is going to be awesome at the Supercard of Honor. After the match, Swerve Strickland and Will Ospreay, they hit the ring. The Young Bucks scramble to get out of the ring. Swerve got on the mic, and he reiterated their challenge from last week to the Bucks for a match at All In, where the Bucks would put their EVP titles on the line against them. And he clarified, I'm glad he did here, because there was a little bit of confusion with some folks. He clarified here, this does not mean that we want to win the EVP titles. That's not like, it's not like the titles are on the line as if we don't have enough of those. We're not looking to be the EVPs. He says, in part because he doesn't trust what Will Ospreay would do with that power if he ever got it. So that's not what they mean when they say that they want the EVP titles on the line. And then he sucked up to the fans and said, the fans are the ones who have the power. And Tony Khan is the one who has the power, because he's the president and CEO of this company. So Ospreay took the microphone and said, the Bucks don't want to wrestle them at All In. The show that they created. Are these guys Young Bucks or are they Young Cucks? And they bleeped it out too. It says, give us an answer. So Matt says, what's the deal with you guys and with Hangman? Like, you all think that you make the stipulations around here? He said, hell no. Because what do we get out of this? And I'm like, yes, exactly. That's the question I raised last week. What do they get out of this? So Ospreay said, well, he has something they might be interested in. And he walked over and he whispered something to Swerve. He basically, trust me. Like, trust me, bro. He said, if the Bucks accept the match and beat them at All In, then him and Swerve, they cannot challenge for the world championship for 1 year. This was news to Swerve. He did not sound or look or appear very happy because he walked over to Ospreay and basically was like, what the fuck, dude? He was not happy about that. Matt said, you know, that's the smartest thing that Ospreay has ever suggested. You've got a deal, but you've got to get Swerve on the same page. Swerve, if this is what you want too, then you've got a deal. And ultimately, reluctantly, Swerve agreed, and so the match was made. I'm very happy that they added that stipulation, because I said it last week when I reviewed the previous segment with these guys. Literally on this review last week, I said the Bucks have absolutely no incentive to say yes to this challenge. Because if they don't turn around and say, you guys have to put something on the line in return, they look like complete blithering idiots. Why would they say yes and agree to put their executive vice president powers and their titles on the line against these men if they're not willing to put something on the line in return? Now, what that would be, I wasn't sure, but I said they have to correct this because, or the Bucks can just say no, because otherwise they're going to look like a couple of idiots. And thankfully, they did address it here. And it's better than them putting their careers on the line, because I was thinking maybe that's what they're going to put on the line, but then that makes the finish so predictable. This makes the outcome a little less predictable. It's still pretty predictable, but it would be worse if it was their careers on the line. At least in this case, you could plausibly make the case, okay, neither of these guys will challenge for the world. It would be like Cody Rhodes all over again, but only for 1 year. Even though I don't think anybody believes that, and I think most people would probably pick Swerve and Hangman to win, or Swerve and, well, it should be them, Swerve and Ospreay to win this match, but I was happy they addressed it. I was hoping they would do so, and I'm glad they did. After the break, Swerve and Ospreay were still in the ring because they had a match coming up, and it was another one of these heroes versus villains branded match between Swerve, Ospreay, Dralístico, and the Beast Mortos. Do you realize this is the third week in a row, and I think the third time in 5 weeks that this man, or maybe the fourth time in 5 weeks, that this man has had a match on Dynamite? That's never happened before. He's never been on Dynamite this consistently. Now, he wasn't in the main event this week, but at least he's on the show, so good for him. Mortos didn't want to wait for his introduction. As he ran to the ring, he clobbered Ospreay. Double Hurricane Ranas from Ospreay and Strickland followed in response. There was a great-looking tornado dive by Mortos out to the floor, heading into a commercial break. That's right, Frank. Frank, that's right, Frank the lawyer. Dralístico and Morto, maybe if Frank the lawyer worked for the government, Diddy would be going away for the rest of his life. Dralístico and Mortos, they controlled things through the commercial break. Strickland, though, kipped up into a super kick, which rocked Mortos. He tagged in Ospreay. He ran wild. He hit a Sasuke special onto the pile outside. Back inside, Ospreay missed a corner charge, which allowed Mortos to hit a backstabber. Dralístico came off the top for a double stomp. Dralístico hit a destroyer on Ospreay, who got folded up then after that by a spear by Frank. Mortos tried to pop up Samoan drop, but Ospreay countered into a crucifix bomb, a swerve stomp, stormbreaker combo, then laid out Mortos, and Dralístico was taken out with a Styles Clash house call combo for the win. They kept it relatively brief. This was probably eight or nine minutes. It did not need to go longer than that. It was a solid match. It served its purpose. Purely a showcase for Ospreay and for Swerve heading into the pay-per-view. If anything, it was more competitive, frankly, than it had to be. But it was fine. It was a solid match, not the best thing on the show. But they closed the show. It was a very wrestling-heavy show, right? I mean, again, they did tell certain stories and shoot certain angles here to forward things for All In, but there was not a lot of gaga on this show. Pretty straightforward stuff that led right into the main event, which was Kazuchika Okada, the reigning Continental Champion, in one of the main events at All In. One-on-one tonight, he was out to the ring with Lance Archer and Dan Callis. Yes, Don Callis, his brother Dan, was not there to take on the Golden Star, Kota Ibushi. Their last match, the last match these two men had, was nearly 4 years ago. It was in the finals of the G1 Climax in 2021. It was on its way to being a classic match. And then Ibushi went for a Phoenix Splash off the top, and he missed, but in doing so, he landed right on his shoulder. And he badly separated his shoulder. And that was the last match he ever had for New Japan. It has been nothing but injuries. He'd been plagued by injuries and issues ever since then. So when he showed up on television for the first time in a while, a few weeks ago on Collision, just looking at him, he looked healthier. He looked like he was as close to the same Ibushi physically that he was years ago when we saw him in New Japan, even though he's 4 years older now. So that gave me some hope when they announced this match, because from what we saw in the match he had with Trent Beretta, it was fairly limited, but it was a good match. It was fine. But this was going to be a real test. Now, I wasn't expecting these guys to go out there and have a 25-minute, 30-minute knockdown drag-out like they would have had in New Japan back in the day. But this was going to be a test for both guys, because even with Okada, we don't get to see New Japan Okada very often. We see glimpses of him. It really depends on who he's in the ring with. We'll get to see him next weekend when he wrestles Omega. I'm sure of that. For all we know, it could be the last match these two have. So I'm sure we're going to get that. But in this case, like, what Kota Ibushi were we going to get in the ring tonight against Okada? I'm happy to report that we got the Ibushi that we got was as close to the Ibushi of old as you could hope for here for this television main event. Okada shoved him and started to paintbrush him at the very beginning, and then he rolled outside like a dick to the floor. So the action spilled out to the floor. Okada sent Ibushi into the ring steps. This took us into a commercial break. A little later on, there was a wicked-looking running knee strike by Ibushi to a seated Okada that netted Ibushi a two count. Okada came back with a big flapjack and then his trademark neck breaker over the knee. Okada headed up top. He dropped an elbow to the guts. Then he came off with his Rainmaker flip-off pose that he does. Ibushi backed Okada into the corner when Okada tried for a Rainmaker, but Okada fought out. Then he delivered a shotgun dropkick. Ibushi took this just ridiculous bump backwards into the bottom turnbuckle and just wrecked himself. Okada started delivering forearms, and Ibushi all of a sudden went into murder Ibushi mode here, where it's just like he sort of detaches from himself. He becomes this other person, and he starts no-selling, and he gets this really scary look in his eyes. So then he starts lighting Okada up with right hands. Okada's sitting in the corner. He's covering up. The referee backs him off. Okada came back with another Rainmaker attempt that Ibushi ducked, and he delivered one hell of a lariat of his own. Ibushi was looking to finish it with a Phoenix Splash, and I'm like, oh shit, don't do that. Don't do that. So he was up there, he was about to go for it, but Okada got up, he went over and grabbed him in a waist lock. Took him off the ropes with a German suplex. There was a Rainmaker attempt that got foiled, and then Ibushi delivered a kick to the side of the neck. We got loud Ibushi chants here from the crowd. They ended up on the ropes. Ibushi got... Now, this right here. I mentioned the deadly Gonzo bomb earlier in the show from Brody King. This right here trumped that one because they're on the top rope and Ibushi gets a double underhook, and fucking A, I thought he killed him. I thought he killed him. I had the same reaction watching this that I did when Chad Gable basically did the same move to Vikingo at Worlds Collide, where he gave him that, avalanche powerbomb off the top rope. This looked like from the first angle, like he spiked him on his head, but then they showed it from the other side. And as safely as you can do a move like that, it was basically an avalanche. He called it an avalanche tiger driver, Excalibur on commentary. It was more like an avalanche powerbomb, but wow. And somehow Okada got a shoulder up at 2.999. There was a Kamigoye attempt by Ibushi that Okada was able to avoid. He grabbed the wrists. He was going to try again, and Okada knew it, and he got over to the ropes, trying to get that rope break. As the referee was telling Ibushi to let go, though, Okada rocked him with a clothesline, and then he hit the picture-perfect dropkick. And then he followed that up with a Rainmaker flush. Just one is all it takes. And he got the pin. After the match, Okada, Callis, Archer, Rocky Romero all of a sudden was there in the ring. They're all putting the boots to Ibushi. Archer was about to hit a chokeslam when Kenny Omega's music hits. What a shock. Here he comes. He comes out with a chair. And he hits the ring and the Callis family bails. Trent Barretta, though, all of a sudden, he appears in the ring behind Omega, who is completely oblivious to this. And Barretta has a baton in his hand. Ibushi gets up. He grabs the baton out of his hand. So now Omega turns around. He spots Barretta, and he powerbombs Barretta into the air, into Ibushi, who catches him and takes him over with a German suplex. So then Ibushi is up. Omega's up. They're staring at each other. And Ibushi embraces Omega. And yes, we got the Golden Lovers reunion here at the end of this show here. And the fans all cheered. And they gave one last hard sell for the big winner-take-all match in Arlington. It will be Omega, Okada, champion against champion, title for title, to crown a brand new unified champion. It's the name of the title. They also hyped up Collision 100 for Saturday, which is being taped right now. I'm guessing, and I said this the other day, I'm guessing that Adam Copeland returns on that show after the FTR match. FTR has a match with the Outrunners. Just a guess on my part, but that would seem to me, especially if they wanted to do something special for the 100th episode of Collision, and, you know, we're coming up pretty quick on this big all-in card. So unless they want Copeland as a surprise in the Gauntlet match, which I hope not, because that probably means he's winning, this would seem to be the time for him to come back and to go after FTR, since they're the ones that took him out in the first place, and then build to whatever it is that they're going to do it all in, because FTR doesn't have a match, and Copeland's been waiting. He's been waiting for creative to kick in and to come back. I can't imagine they wouldn't want to have him on that show. But this was one hell of a main event here, and it was a return to form for Kota Ibushi, and I'm very happy to see him healthy again. He was going through this stretch where he looked washed. And you just look at him, and you look at the reports about the ankle injuries and then just the shoulder and all these different just physical injuries that he was dealing with. And it just felt like, you know what, we're never going to get that guy back again. And I don't even want to see him in the ring. I just want him to just heal up. Like, he wasn't giving himself time to heal up. He felt like he had to get back in the ring. And it was sad. But to see him out there in the ring tonight in the main event, he's not washed. He's healthy again. He's healthy again. He's able to go in there and show you the Ibushi of old when he was going out there and he was having these great matches. That guy is still there, and he could be a very useful asset to Tony Khan. It's not going to be somebody that Tony builds the company around or anything like that, but he's over. He's a great wrestler. People know who he is. He does have, you know, name recognition from all of his success in New Japan. He can absolutely be an asset to Tony Khan because he has an AEW contract. I mean, some people think he's like still with New Japan. Like, oh, he's the New Japan guy. He hasn't been with New Japan for years. Some people don't realize that. Like, he's full-time an AEW contracted talent. He's just been hurt. So Tony now has somebody back that he can put to use, and I was very happy to see him, again, a return to form for him here in this main event. So this was, I thought, a very good episode of Dynamite. Their best in a while. Very clear focus on the Arlington show, as it should be. Hangman, Moxley, they have the Texas Deathmatch stipulation now. Young Bucks get Ospreay and Swerve to put something up in their tag team match, which is now official for All In. Mercedes and Toni Storm. Mercedes is still the TBS champion. Good match with Mina. Where things are going to go coming out of that show is completely dependent upon whether or not they decide that Tony is going to lose to this woman. Toni Storm should not be losing at All In. If she does, I don't know where they go from there. I don't know what it accomplishes. Hurt Syndicate and Jet Speed, not a fan of that angle, but obviously that's going to be the tag team title match. And MJF secures the number two spot in the Gauntlet. Those are the key takeaways here from tonight's episode. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll. What did you think of Dynamite 300 by a margin of about 61 to 39? Thumbs up. A strong thumbs up for tonight's Dynamite. Today's episode is sponsored by Factor. We just had our first heat wave of the summer here. I could have cooked an egg on the floor if I wanted to outside, but that would be disgusting. You know what's not disgusting? It's actually the exact opposite. Factor meals. They're chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Factor meals arrive fresh and ready to eat, making them perfect for any active lifestyle. You don't want to be slaving over a hot stove when you could spend more of your time outside enjoying the summer weather. With 45 weekly menu options, you can pick gourmet meals that fit your goals. Choose from Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, Keto, and more. Factor powers your day with nutritious breakfasts, on-the-go lunches, premium dinners, and I don't know about you, but my personal favorite, guilt-free snacks and desserts. Enjoy more this summer. If you want all the flavor without the fuss, Factor's got you covered. One of my favorite meals that I've had from Factor, it was just in the last few months, actually, and I've had some really good ones in the past, but there were two. One was the Ropa Vieja chicken thigh bowl, and the other, and my number one, was the sesame teriyaki filet mignon. If I spend 2 minutes trying to make anything, it's not coming out as good as this, okay? I could tell you that. So it's pretty cool that I could eat healthier while actually enjoying what it is that I'm eating. And I don't have to feel guilty after I'm done. Plus, you know, I'm streaming almost every night at this point, or it feels that way. And I'm watching so much wrestling every week. It's really convenient for me to be able to just heat it up in 2 minutes flat and have dinner, just like that. Factor takes care of the hard part. Let them take care of it for you too, with this exclusive offer for Sound Off listeners. Get started at factormeals.com/solomonster50off and use code solomonster50off to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. That's code solomonster50off at factormeals.com/solomonster50off for 50% off plus free shipping. factormeals.com/solomonster50off. All right, let's take a look at your super chats. Where are we on the likes? 300? A little over 300? Not good enough. Not good enough for Be the Booker. We got to get that up to 400. So let's work on that. Let's take a look at your super chats. I thank you guys for hanging out with me here on a Wednesday. Hey, Fire Panda. Thank you again for the 50. How dare you deprive me of my comedy by having an HOG show on the 12-year anniversary of August 1st warning. For shame. Yeah, still one of the all-time memorable moments in TNA history for all the wrong reasons. You know who the star of that segment was? Mr. Anderson. If you saw it, you know why. Duff's Vids, why did the man name his dogs Timex and Rolex? Because they're watchdogs. Watchdogs, man. It's a good thing he didn't name his dog Apple Watch. This is why I leave the jokes to Duff's Vids. Havili! Oh, we love to see Havili here. What's up, Solomonster? How are you doing today? It is Thursday, the 3rd of July. Of course, he is in Brisbane. But that is why. Beyonce or Rihanna? Rihanna. Saved by the Bell or Full House? I watched them both, but I'm going to go Full House. A couple of years ago, Cornette was asked to do a WWE versus WCW supercard, and he had Undertaker against Terry Funk and Sting against The Rock. What are your favorites? Yeah, I feel like I've answered this question a million times over the last several years, but you can't go wrong with, like, Rock and DDP, Sting and Undertaker. I mean, there were so many different matches that you could have done. I mean, it's kind of endless. Obviously, you're going to hear a lot of, like, Austin Goldberg. And, you know, of course, at their peak, that would have been a huge attraction. But they're just too similar. What's your favorite pizza? I don't have pizza anymore, so I don't really have a favorite. Tupac or Biggie? Tupac. Thank you, Avili. Duff's Vids, I went to the beekeeper to get 10 bees. He gave me 11. I said, sir, you gave me one extra. He said, that's a freebie. It's a freebie. Get it free? Yeah, see? Thank you, Duff's. Man, Duff's is on a roll. Oh, Also, why was the broom late for work? It overswept. I don't like that one. Not so good. The inventor of the cough drop died. There was no coffin at the funeral. No coffin. And singing in the shower is great until you get shampoo in your mouth. Then it's a soap opera. Griga. Hey, Griga, what's going on? I haven't heard from Griga in a while. Ontario was a packed show. Collision will be right after Dynamite. Rock on, Mr. Solo. Does that mean you were there? Sounds like Griga may have been at the show. Thank you, brother. Jerome Eugenio, good show tonight. Yes. Yes, it was. We got a tough crowd here. Tough crowd here. Hannah Blackman. What's going on, Hannah? Great show tonight. Happy I'll be at All In. What do you do to keep JD so calm on TNT? I've never heard him rage on there. Oh, he knows better. I have a very calming influence. I'm very calming on people. Somebody has to keep him in check. Thank you, Hannah. Duff's Viz, what do you call a mat made out of hemp? A gateway rug. Yeah, that's where that one belongs. A gateway rug. Come on, man. We got boots. Actually, before we get to boots, Dev to Dust, 40 months. Look at this guy. 40 months of channel membership, says buy or sell. Which female discography do you enjoy more? Madonna or Cyndi Lauper? Madonna? I like Cyndi Lauper's music very much, but I'll go Madonna. Also, what is your favorite song from Madonna and from Cyndi Lauper? You know what song of Cyndi Lauper? I mean, Cyndi Lauper's had a lot of really good songs, but I, because I'm a fan of the Goonies movie. And she did that song, The Goonies Are Not Enough. I think I might have to go with that one. You know, I never realized until a few years ago that she was doing the backup vocals on Real American. I had no idea that was her voice. For Madonna, I don't know if I have one, just one, but I mean, I always used to play Like a Prayer many years ago. That was one of my favorites. There's Boots with the $100 bomb. Happy birthday to the best there is, was, and ever will be. I wouldn't be upset if the Hitman does a walk-in at Saturday night's main event and screws Oldberg in his last match. Or maybe Gunther can lock in the sharpshooter. You know what? He absolutely should do that. I don't know if the match will go long enough for it, but I would love to see Gunther apply the sharpshooter to Goldberg. Dev to Dust, the Mets finally won a game on Bret Hart's birthday. Happy birthday, Brett. The Average Grunt, episode 300 of the longest running primetime wrestling show on Turner Broadcasting. What a banger. AEW is red hot, heading towards their biggest show. I don't know about red hot, but I enjoyed the show. It was a good show tonight. I'm looking forward to All In. Arabian Night, do you think TNA was overambitious running UBS for Slammiversary? 3 weeks away and only 3,200 tickets sold is bad. Surprised WWE has not allowed AJ to wrestle there. Yeah, you know, I would have thought that there would have been a relatively big WWE name on that show. Since they have this working relationship and all, and you know, TNA certainly has no issues sending talent and loaning talent to them. It's like, hey guys, we could use some help here, but I guess Trick Williams. They figure, well, you got Trick Williams. They're gonna need something on that show. You know, they're not getting John Cena, but they're gonna need something on that show. It's a big building. I thought they had something else up their sleeve, but I don't know. We still got a few weeks, but I don't know. It's not looking like they are holding for a big surprise. EJ Slim, happy birthday to Bret Hart. That's right. Happy 68th birthday. Oh, I forgot. He's with us here. So. You bring him into the picture here. There he is. Bret wants to see the super chats too. It'll let the man read along with us. EJ Slim, the one Bret Hart dream match that no one ever talks about. Bret Hart against Minoru Suzuki. Ed Swoggle, if Moxley is winning, Omega versus Okada is main eventing. Probably, yeah. You're probably right. Leopoldo, there he is with the $40 bomb. Hey, Bret. Yeah, Bret wants to have a drink. Go ahead. You've earned it, brother. Have I seen that Great American Bash card? You know, I've seen some of the matches that they announced for Great American Bash. It's like... I ain't watching that shit. With everything else going on that day, I ain't watching that shit. Leopoldo, Moxley looking for the ring is like a guy refusing to ask for directions, thinking, okay, north is that way. Be cool, just turn around. Nope, that's south. Fuck. Knoxbury Farm. Then yells, I got this. Someone obviously moved Disneyland. That was quite the journey, reading that super chat. That was all over the place. Leopoldo, thank you. Griga, FTR against the Outrunners, instant classic. Duff's Vids, I just accidentally inhaled Kool-Aid dust, so if I come busting through your wall, you'll know why. And what do you get from a thinking cow? Concentrated milk. Ah. Concentrated milk. Dan Richards, 25 months of membership. When is All In next year? Good excuse to keep Ospreay from the title picture for a year to finally win the title in London next year. Says Bucks win. I would imagine that All In goes back to August next year. I think he's going to want to run that bank holiday weekend. So, I mean, it would be over a year from now. But then Swerve kind of gets fucked. Keep him out of the world title picture for a year. Food Hive, I'm wearing my white chef coat at All In. Say hi. Well, whoever's going, say hi, because I won't be there, so... If you are going to go and you see him in his white chef coat. White chef coat. Wouldn't that be a... That wouldn't be a chef coat, though. That would be a... scientist coat, no? Ed Swoggle, put FTR in the gauntlet. Cope can be in and not win. That's fine. As long as he doesn't win. B Money, how did you celebrate Bobby Bonilla Day yesterday? I celebrated by doing Tuesday Night Titans. That's how I celebrated, by working and going to the gym. Joking aside, have you checked out the video of Diesel's final days in WWE on the Vault yet? No, I'm behind. They've posted a lot of really good shit lately. There's a four-hour Bret Hart mixtape that I have yet to dive into. So I have to watch that. Today, I watched the Hogpen match from 1995 between Henry Godwin and Hunter Hearst Helmsley. That's 10 minutes of my life I will not get back, but I did watch it. Meanwhile, you know, everybody is talking about the WWE Vault channel. And they've been posting like full shows, like full Great American Bash pay-per-views on the WCW channel. No one's talking about that. Including Great American Bash 85, which I think is pretty rare, I think, as far as the actual full show and not just highlights. The Juliet 316, happy birthday to the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. Bret the Hitman Hart. That's right, not Bret Shart. Food Hive, how was Bobby Day? How was Bonilla Day, Mets fan? Bonilla Day was fine. I don't collect $1.2 million each year like he does, though. So his day was much better than mine. By the way, he'll be collecting that money until he is 72 years old. God bless him. Number one, Homo Sapien. I'm thinking of becoming a hitman. I heard they make a Ron Killings. Had to edit because of the bad word. Yeah, well, it was a lost cause either way. I was tempted to hit the flush, but I'll spare you. Food Hive says, hypothetical, if not watching wrestling for 1 year meant a Mets World Series win, what would you choose? Would you abandon us? No, I would not abandon you, because then I would not make any money and make a living, which would be pretty terrible, so... This is what I do now. I mean, why would I give that up for an entire year? To do what? To go back to doing what I was doing before? I gave that up this year for a reason, because I don't want to do it anymore. And this ain't the time to be giving up your job, if you got one. So, no, I would not give up watching wrestling to see the Mets win a World Series. Uffman Entertainment, happy birthday to Bret Hart. It is absolutely no coincidence that His Excellency's birthday is the day after Canada Day. Surprise it's not on Canada Day. I think Bret Hart's birthday, in a way, is Canada Day. It is another Canada Day. Should be a national holiday. We fell short of Be the Booker. So we will have to try again on Friday. Friday is a taped SmackDown, but... more importantly, it's a two-hour SmackDown. It is the beginning of the two-hour era, the rebirth of two-hour SmackDowns. So we will be celebrating much more than just our nation's independence on Friday. We will be celebrating our independence from three-hour SmackDowns. I will be here for the review after SmackDown, and hopefully we will be able to be the booker going into the holiday weekend. Until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great night. This is Sparta. Say goodbye to King Khan there in the corner. And I will see you guys back here on Friday for the SmackDown review. Until then, take care, guys.